Hello and welcome back to another episode of Only a Bag, a travel podcast. I'm Darcy Melton and with me is...
Nathaniel Mellor. Thank you all for coming back and listening.
Yeah.
And before we get started, I want to wish Darcy a very happy birthday.
Thank you. It's my birthday.
And why are we recording this on your birthday?
So y'all know,
we're from the South. Is that, if you guys didn't know that, it's the y'all. Is that what gave you away?
we actually recorded this podcast this past weekend, and then we went to Florence the next day, 2 days later. And hadn't published what we'd recorded, and just decided that we needed to update so many things that we're recording this episode again.
Yeah, so it's now, I mean, we were trying to put them out on Mondays, and it's now Wednesday, so it's going to come out either tonight or tomorrow, ideally tonight. That'd be really cool. It's basically just, I think we wanted to update, like, so many things that we had said, because we realized we went during COVID, not, like, in the height of it at all. It was sort of at the very...
It was just at the end of... restrictions being sort of lifted,
I mean, already it was, like, no more masks or anything like that. However... I think there was a kind of a really big difference between sort of pre and post COVID. And so we wanted to sort of give more up-to-date information in this episode.
We also went in the fall.
That's a very good point.
All of the previous times that we'd been to Florence were in the fall. This was in, obviously, the height of summer. It's now August, but we went on the last day of July. So different energy, different things were open.
Yeah, and the place had a more like lively feel, I think. Maybe more touristy feel, but more lively feel.
It was packed.
And before we get started with any of that, we're no longer running ads. So instead of listening to an ad break right now, instead we're going to be sort of advertising our affiliate links. And the first one we have today is Trainline. It's how we buy our tickets on the train or buses throughout Italy. There's a website in the description below. If you use the link that we provide, we'll get a little percent back. I think it's like 1 or 2% back of the
but
ticket
sale. But it's
helpful.
Sale. It really helps us out.
But it's incredibly helpful and we really, really appreciate it. The website's in English. You can find all the tickets you're looking for. If you're going to go anywhere around Italy, we hope that you use our link. As always, if you enjoy this episode, if you enjoy the podcast, we would love it if you were to follow us on Spotify and leave a review on Apple or Google or wherever you are listening to this podcast, because it helps us out tremendously.
It really does.
We had no idea. That's why we haven't really asked for this before, but we were like, apparently... Like, the one time somebody leaves a review, it's like, oh, well, that really helped. So here, call to action right at the beginning. With all that being said, what are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about the food in Florence.
The food in Florence is a beautiful topic, I think.
It is.
I'm very excited.
Do you want to talk about classic Florentinian food first?
Yeah, I think that's a really good place to start. And I think there's really just two worth mentioning. If you're like a Florentinian food expert, there's probably hundreds, but... the two main ones and the ones you'll probably see the most on your trip are going to be the Lampredotto or Tripa. It goes by both names. And there's always the Florentine steak or the Bistecca alla Fiorentina. I always mess it up, apparently. the Fiorentina, it's the R, it always gets me there. And that's just the sort of classic Florentine steak that will be served in restaurants, even in America. I mean, it's a very classic steak, I feel like.
It is, but if you've had it in the States, I haven't, so I can't say. It might be different here. Meaning everybody who makes it here in at least a professional sense, all the chefs, make it very specifically and source it very specifically.
Well, I think that's something to go ahead and mention very briefly is there's a whole kind of culture around a lot of these foods that are like where they're sourced from, right? And like where they're, like how they're seasoned and how they're, grown and whatever. And I think the Florentine steak is no different. It's from the, it's supposed to be from the Chianina cattle or cow. And it's supposed to be basically, it's like, I think it's a sirloin or it's a T-bone steak, essentially.
Bone in.
And ideally, I'm using inches here, it's about 1 to 2 inches thick, depending on kind of where you get it. There's rules on, like, it can't be less than 500 grams, the steak itself. It has to be... that's like the minimum. So it's about 1 pound. And then normally it's served anywhere between 1 and 1.5 kilos, and that's like 2 to 3 pounds, basically. And then they have this whole bit on, like, you know, how you cook it. It has to be, it has to be right over the coals. It has to be, 2 minutes aside, 3 minutes aside.
It has to be grilled, right, on charcoal?
It's like, yeah, grilled on charcoal, and it has to, like, have it, like, there's a whole, the Maillard effect, which is, like, I guess, it's, I think it's Maillard effect is when it sort of creates that crust, for lack of a better word, basically.
Is it, like, caramelization?
It's kind of caramelization, okay. Yeah. Between, I think, like, there's just the fats and the proteins. Mm-hmm. So there's a kind of a, I don't know, it seems very specific. It seems like it's not just, like, grilled in a pan, because they're very, very, I guess, like, you can't use, like, gas ovens, you can't use electric, you can't use, a Skittle. It's, like, it has to be grilled, which I guess in a restaurant you just have a little grill in the back. Not in the back of the, I mean, in the kitchen. It's just they have a charcoal bit.
Not, like, out back in the alley.
Yeah, not out back.
But also the cow that they use has to be a certain age, right?
It's something like 17 months or something ridiculous. It's, yeah, like, a year and a half, basically.
I think. Actually, I don't know anything about cattle and beef, but that seems young to me.
It seems really young, but I also know nothing about meat, so I have no idea. Some of you, our dear listeners, might know a lot more about the age of meat. And I think it's supposed to be finished, like, when you finish cooking it, they basically stand it up on the bone and cook it for about 6 to 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. There's a whole thing about how you're not cooking the inside of the steak, you're simply warming it up so it's not cold. And we found that a lot of, like, the restaurants in Florence, we're vegetarians, so we haven't actually tried this, mm-hmm. But we have learned from asking around that a lot of restaurants in Florence, you typically can choose which cut you want. Like, I mean, they have these, when you walk into the restaurant, basically slabs of beef, and you go, you can choose, like, here's the cut I want from which flank. I don't really know meat terms.
I just threw side in there. I don't know if that's
hoping
correct.
That one's on the board. So there is a bit of a picking and choosing involved, for sure. However, they typically only cook it, like, blue rare to rare. Some places will go a little bit, like, medium rare, but I guess we've seen a lot of restaurants that'll even make a joke about it, but they won't go over medium.
Joke meaning, like, they'll put a little sign outside saying, like, don't come order this if you're going to ask for it. Anything more than rare, it's not going to
happen.
And if
it's, like, well done, it's like we're calling the cops.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of, like, that kind of thing, but it's...
But they're serious about it because it won't be cooked more than rare. Yeah. Medium's not going to happen. Well done, absolutely.
Yeah,
not.
And I think that's something to just consider. Like, it's I think if you're... Like, the whole customer's always right thing that we have in America doesn't really extend here.
Absolutely not.
So it's especially when it comes, I think, to the Florentine steak. They're like, we'd rather you leave and sell the steak to somebody who... else.
Yeah, and I think it's something about respecting the meat and respecting tradition,
absolutely, that
they hold it to a very specific standard.
I think, no, absolutely, and it's all about, like, that sort of, part of Italy is it's always been done this way and it always will be done this way.
Which isn't always great.
No.
But it's the way they do things, and sometimes that's how it should be done, I think.
Yeah. No, and I mean, if you like rare steak, honestly, you're going to have a blast. We did go with your mom, and she does not like rare meat.
Right, so she did not have any.
But we looked at it, and it looked really good. And if you're concerned, like, a pound of meat, 2 pounds of meat, 3 pounds of meat seems a little much, it will be offered you almost always as, like, a... sort of an entree for two, kind of, not an entree.
Yeah, it's like a plate to share, is what it is. And a lot of the restaurants will have, like, on their little specials board outside, their deal or whatever it is. And it usually is the bistecca alla Fiorentina, 2 glasses of wine. Sometimes it'll come with contorni.
One thing that's something else to mention is, although it's a huge piece of meat, it is still kind of falls in a lot of the a lot of the Italian way of eating, which is, the antipasta, the pasta, or the primo, the meat, which is the secondo, and then you have the contorni afterwards. Mm-hmm. So you still, like, they'll still say, like, okay, what pasta do you want? What antipasta do you want? What, sides would you like? So it's not like, I mean, the better restaurants, like good and above, I should say, will not have stuff on the side of your bistecca alla Fiorentina. They'll have,
not
a side of potatoes or something like that. It's not like it doesn't come with things. It's just the meat. But if you really like meat, have no fear. They are also intended for one person to eat. So if you would like to sit there and have 3 pounds of meat, absolutely.
That.
I mean, that's the place to do it. I think that pretty much covers, the sort of basics of the bistecca alla Fiorentina.
I think so.
Okay. So the other one is lamprodotto.
Yes, lamprodotto, tripa, which is tripe. And that, well, it's similar to tripe. Tripe, I guess, is any animal stomach or any cow stomach?
I think it's any animal, like pig, lamb, okay. sheep, cow.
And tripa or lampradotto is the fourth stomach of a cow.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting. And
not sure what's going on with the other three.
Yeah. I don't know, but I get very specific food, these Italians. That's the thing.
Very specific food.
You know more about it than I do.
I don't think so. I mean, I might. We both looked these things. I mean, because you know, I think it's one of those things, you'd go to these places and you're like expecting to find cultural food, and then you're like, it's kind of like go to Scotland, and then they start offering you weird cuts of meat, and you're like, I don't know if like I trust haggis? This. Like haggis.
We never had real haggis in Scotland. We had the vegetarian haggis.
Which was delicious.
Shout out to the haggis box. This yes. is not a Edinburgh episode, but it's great.
Shout out to the haggis box. No, it's so basically lampradotto is essentially how it's cooked is they stew or boil. I think stew is a better word. Boil makes it sound weird. The stomach, usually for like 8 to 12 hours with like celery, onions, salt, pepper, seasonings of sorts, a lot of spices, until it kind of makes like a quite a hearty stew. Mm-hmm. And then more often than not, I mean, you can have it as a bowl for sure. There's like a bowl of...
Yeah, it's served as a bowl, yeah.
But it's really common to have it as a sandwich. So what they do is they kind of, you know, take out a piece or two of this stomach, bring it over to the cutting board, chop it up into little bits, stick it onto a sandwich, and then they typically finish with like what they call salsa verde, which is I guess just green sauce. And here it, or not here, but I guess Italy has, it's a different salsa verde than like anywhere else.
In the world, yes. Yeah. It's probably not the salsa verde that you're thinking of. Well, it certainly wasn't the one I was thinking of when I heard salsa verde.
Well, I think so, because as Americans, I think we're used to like the sort of South American Mexican version of salsa verde, which is like a tomatillo based like salsa verde, or like could be jalapenos, but I think most of them are tomatillo. But here it's a basically a mixture of like parsley and oregano and a handful of herbs, anchovies, olives, capers. It's sort of like, think salty, savory, and herb. I think garlic is in there, so some fresh garlic's in there, so it's supposed to be quite like
Sharp.
Yeah, like picante. Fatty. Like, yeah. yeah. And, which I guess here they use the word picante, not to mean spicy, but sharp. Like, sort of, like almost like it'll be kind of like a refreshing. Because otherwise you're having this really dense, really beautiful, seasoned sort of stomach. And then you're like, I need something. Kind of cut it through up. It.
Yeah.
And that's really, really common. That's like really popular street food in Florence. Almost everywhere that makes sandwiches has lampradotto. There's like lampradotto boxes. One is near the Dante Museum. It's a famous one.
Meaning like a food truck?
A food box.
Okay, but not, I guess whenever I hear box, I think of like it's served in a box. Oh, but you mean more yes. like it is a...
The structure is a box.
Structure where you can purchase your lampradotto.
And it's served in a little sandwich. Got yeah. But also, again, if you like the idea more of eating it out of a bowl, or you can't eat gluten or wheat, then they do the same thing in a bowl, so you can just have it like as a little stew with the salsa verde, I believe, as well. So those are the two very classic, very common foods in Florence. And if you do eat meat, if you're vegetarian, obviously good luck, that's not available for you.
Neither of those are things that we vegetarians can eat.
Yeah.
But there's lots of other great food.
Lots of amazing
food.
We'll get to that. Do not worry. But if you do eat meat and those sound good, you can find tons of them in Florence. And I hope that you do, you know, at some point, try them when you're there. Because that's like classic Florentinian food. And I think sometimes other towns don't really have classic food here.
Yeah, you exactly. know? Absolutely.
So now that we've covered the classics.
Well, one other classic that I just do want to give, it's more of a warning, is that bread that you purchase, meaning not like necessarily at the grocery store.
No,
like
definitely the grocery store.
Well, I guess it's not like packaged bread off the shelf. It's not sliced
sandwich
bread that we're talking
about.
Yeah, okay. Yes. But at the grocery store bakery, which are typical here, and any panificio or forno, which are both places that you can buy bread, it's typical in Florence to make bread without salt. Usually there is an option for with salt, but you might have to ask. But they were part of the salt wars, so in a long time ago they stopped putting.
What is it, like 1600s?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, I think that's about right. They stopped putting salt in the bread
because the Pope was taxing salt, and they're like, you know what? We don't need to use salt. And he was like, good luck. It's going to taste terrible. And he was right.
I don't think it's that bad.
It's not amazing. I'll be honest. If you like bread and you bake bread and you forget to put the salt in bread and you're like, God, that's not good. You know exactly what we're talking about.
Yes.
Because I feel like we bake bread quite often, and then we forget to put salt. I forget to put in salt all the time. It's like, I don't know what is going on in my head. Then I'm just like, oh, there's another loaf 30 minutes in the oven without any salt in. I tried to do like a salt wash afterwards to make up for it, and it's not the same. But yeah, you will not be able to find, well, actually I think like a big warning is the whole bread on the table thing isn't that common in Italy. I mean,
oh, the bread basket thing.
Yeah. Tuscany is probably the only region where I've ever actually like seen it. And I don't think either of us know if it's a traditional thing or a, like, I don't know, new recent tourist thing.
We had bread
thing
on the table when we went to Bracciano the other day.
That's a good point, because you know what? I will say, take that back, because it comes with certain dishes in the rest of Italy. Like in the south where we are, you don't get bread on the table when you arrive. Like you do, like, you know, American restaurants.
Oh, yeah. It's not like a munching before lunch or dinner thing.
Yeah, it's usually
to scoop up the extra bits when you're done eating.
And especially, I think, if you have like, because if you go to like tavolo caldo, which are like hot tables, it's a bunch of like hot, ready to eat food kind of thing. Like it's all made there. It's all usually really delicious. But you'll notice too, like sometimes if you get the vegetables, they put some bread on the side. Or if you get like the meatballs or whatever, you know, chunks of chicken, they usually stick a couple pieces of bread on the side. So it's like if you're getting a pasta dish at a restaurant in the south, for instance,
probably not, yeah.
You're
probably
almost not. Certainly, yeah, not going to get bread on the table. Mm-hmm. But
you can ask for it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
it's not necessarily going to come with it.
So I think that's the thing in Bracciano, that we did get the bread. But it's like, I think the few times we ate in a restaurant in Florence and Siena, it was like as soon as we sat down, it was like bread on the table.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like, oh, I wonder if this is something they've done for... But in Umbria, which is a bordering... it's the region bordering Tuscany. We lived for a little bit in Perugia, which is the capital of Umbria, and the number of times we went out to eat, I don't think they ever...
Yeah, we didn't get bread then.
Yeah.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that.
So it's hard to tell.
We should do some research on that and do some bread on the table episodes.
We should totally do bread on the table. Sounds like a great name for a podcast.
Yeah,
spin-off,
it really
podcast,
does.
Podcast, everybody,
and a
bread
cookbook
on the table. Oh my God, the empire's starting right now.
Okay, one more note though about bread. This is an Italian note. I think it goes for all of Italy, but... in a lot of the world, I think, at least maybe where we're from, you get a piece of bread and you put it on like a little tea
bread plate.
Or on your plate with your food. But in Italy, often you will see people take their little slice of bread or piece of bread out of the basket, communal table bread basket, and just put it on the table next to their plate. I don't know where that tradition started, but that's what they do. So... Heads up.
It's like, and it might not be a very clean table, but that's a risk you're willing to take, I hope.
And that's to say you don't have to participate in that.
Not at
that's
all.
Just the fun fact.
And no one's going to like be like, oh, that person has their bread on the plate. What a weirdo. I don't think that's the thing here.
Yeah, no. I mean, by and large, I don't think we've ever done anything that's really offended anyone in this country.
Well, I think like maybe some things that possibly we should have started with is simply like the whole like salt and pepper. It's rare to find salt and pepper on the table.
Good point. Yes.
Like, I mean, if that's kind of like one of those, we were going to do this whole episode on how you can tell a touristy restaurant from a not touristy one. The whole like, if the menu's in English, touristy restaurant, if you can see condiments, salt, pepper, and then like, God forbid, like ketchup or something like that on the table, absolutely a touristy restaurant. Because really like amazing and local and like, home-style like kind of restaurants that we've been to, no, it's like you eat the food as it comes out. And I say that because it's like Italy, I think by and large, does not prioritize salt in their food. I think it's in many ways it's almost quite French in that sense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because I think we sometimes when we come back from the States to here, it feels like everything's quite undersalted. But then after being here for a few months and going back to the States,
everything seems super salty in the States.
Yeah,
you just
like,
have to adjust your palate. That's not always the case that you won't
have it
on the table.
You might have some very,
you might also have some very salty dishes. But I was thinking sometimes we have been to places that I think are quite homey in a good way. And they do have like the little caddy with like the spicy oil. And then
that is a very good point.
And then a little bit of olive oil maybe. Maybe salt or pepper. So that's not a hard and fast rule that if you find that on the table, you're at a very touristy, inauthentic restaurant. It's just not that common. Like, it's just not going to happen everywhere.
Well, the spicy oil is a thing, too. That's like, it's a little basically peppercino and olive oil. Or maybe
olive oil.
Okay, some kind of oil. Because I know the worst ones are like just sunflower seed.
Sunflower seed, yeah.
And that's like, a lot of people pour it on like their pasta and stuff like that. But that, I guess that is, yeah, that definitely stands apart in the sense of that it is a condiment on the table. So all those are to say simply that like, yeah, it's you're not going to make too many faux pas. And people are very happy to sort of like fulfill your requests. And we'll talk about that a little bit later as well with some sandwich shops that do. Especially if you're, you know, gluten-free and stuff like that, or you can't eat certain things. Because a lot of what I appreciate is in like a lot of the places we've been in Italy and compared to the States, it's like it isn't made a lot of stuff. It's like kind of made when you order it.
Yeah.
Like even today,
we went to this
market for food, and they were making the carbonara, the pasta carbonara, which is like it's egg and guanciale, which is like pig, it's like pig cheek, or a lot of people use pancetta. And he's making it fresh, so it's like every single bowl, it's like he's, you know, refrying the guanciale, the pancetta, mm-hmm. re-whisking together the eggs. So it's interesting. It's like if you wanted to make it without the, you know, the meat, basically, if you wanted to make it out of the meat, like a vegetarian version, he could do that because he's making mm-hmm. it fresh for you.
Mm-hmm. So aside from the Florentine steak, most of which they will not change
for you. Oh, yes, they would definitely not change that for you. Yeah.
And some chefs might be offended if you ask them to. Most of the time, I don't think you're going to offend anybody.
Yeah, I think it'd be good. So if anyone's listening and you're like, oh my God, I can't go, they have a very specific, by and large, I think Italy, like Italians in general, would like to make people happy. I mean, I think they're
just very amicable people usually.
Well, I think, and we've always had the experience, especially when it comes to food, that people were like, I'd be happy to sort of slightly alter it in a way.
They just want to share their food and their culture. Yeah, absolutely.
Anything for you to enjoy it. So now that we've talked about that, some very basic ground rules and some classic foods, what are we talking about next?
Sandwiches.
Ooh, okay. Do you want to take this away?
Yeah. So first, maybe we should talk about all'antico vinaio.
Okay.
Because that, when you look up, you know, I don't know, best sandwiches in Florence, or best bang for your buck, cheap eats, street food in Florence, that will likely come up in your search, I think.
I think it's the number one. It was, if I'm not mistaken, it was the number one on TripAdvisor in the world.
Is that why you got so famous?
I think that's why I got so
famous. I mean, it got famous and then it got famous, I guess is what we're saying.
But I think it was like number one in Florence, and then just kept getting more and more reviews.
And they're expanding into, well, they expanded essentially. So they expanded into like three different shops on the same street in Florence, right? And they now have two locations in Rome.
I think they're in Milan as well.
Yeah, and now they're moving over to the U.S. There's one already in New York.
One in New York.
And they're expanding to L.A.?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, lots of all'antico vinaio. We haven't been, actually, because the first few times we were in Florence, the lines for these all three restaurants on the same street, within a stone's throw of each other.
Within, like, you could touch. I mean, the two of them were touching.
Yeah, that's true.
And then one was right across the street. Yeah, so within a spit of each other.
Yeah, that's a good point. I lost my train of thought.
Well, babe, their lines were crazy.
Oh, yes. So the lines were massive, like around, literally around the block. That's not an exaggeration.
And I think, in terms of like yards and feet, I guess, I'm just trying to think of it like in terms of like football field, mm-hmm. Easily, it was basically 50 yards wrapped around, back down the street and then wrapped around.
Yeah, hundreds of people.
Yeah, and this isn't like a pedestrian street. I mean, it's a car street.
Yes.
So you just had people in the street. Mm-hmm. And then you had four or five people working for all'antico vinaio with mm-hmm. like
the little clipboards and vests. Reflective vests.
Getting people into lines. And it was hard to figure out if they were asking people what they wanted and then getting them into an appropriate line, saying, like, if you want that sandwich, it's in that line. Or if mm-hmm. they were simply counting out, like,
how many people and managing the line length or something like that.
That way, like, nobody's in. Because I think we went, and maybe to, like, as we segue this, very seamlessly, this time we noticed there's only two of the three locations were open. I mean, the other one was just simply, like, I guess not enough people, so they were kind of closed for the day. Mm-hmm. But one was, like, ridiculous. It was, like, you know, 70 people. And the other one was, like, 15 maybe. Yeah. And so it was unclear if it was like the original location and then the new one, mm-hmm. and a bunch of people were just like, I trust the original one more, because I think the original one, and I'm using that in air quotes, but you guys can't see me because this is an audio form, the one that was the original had like a chalkboard with mm-hmm. the menu versus the one next door, which it had to like print it out on a wall. So I do wonder if there's something like if there's something even like TripAdvisor that we just haven't seen, that's basically like, they're all good, but go to the original one if you're there, because it's like somehow better. Mm-hmm. Like the master works there and the pupils work across the street.
Yeah.
But we haven't actually been there.
We have not. And our advice, I mean, number one, if you want to go there, if that's on your list of must to do in Florence, absolutely do it. If you don't want to wait in line as long and have what I'm guessing is a very similarly tasty sandwich, you can go to La Schiacciata, which is on the same street. And La Schiacciata is the bread that they use for these sandwiches. And it's the same kind of sandwich. They're both like a foot by a foot wide and tall, giant sandwiches. And it's like, it's almost like a focaccia.
Yeah, it's like it's more of a crispy focaccia.
Yeah.
To clarify, though, it's the bread that all of Florentinian sandwiches use.
Yes.
Schiacciata. It's like it's a classic Florentinian bread. So it's not just the name of the place happens to be called La Schiacciata, but it's like...
That's just the kind of bread, like sandwich bread that they have.
Yeah. And it's also, for those of you who are intrepid and exploratory eaters, it both comes like... I mean, you can get it as just a pan sheet if you want like to bring it, you know, back to your hotel room or something like that. You can go to bakeries and stuff like that to find it. It also comes sweet. They'll actually kind of like put, I guess, raw grapes in there. And then when it cooks, they kind of get stewed in the bread.
It's really good.
It sounds weird. It's like grapes in bread, not raisins, like full grapes.
Yeah.
Sounds weird, but it really is quite delicious and unique. Mm-hmm. And it's a classic of the city.
Yeah.
So that's all. It's a little background on the bread. I apologize. Take it away.
No, but La Schiacciata, when we went, it was the time we went with my mom, I guess, and we needed to not wait in line for a few hours for a sandwich. So we went there, and it was great. I mean, giant sandwiches that tasted same price, which is, what, 5 or 6 euros?
They were, I think, closer to 7 or 8.
Okay, they were, because they're really big.
They're really big. I mean, huge sandwich. I mean, this is easy, like... We keep in every episode we've ever made, like, we don't have kids, but maybe consider like splitting one with it. Like if you have a kid, like it's, I don't know. It's like sometimes we're seeing kids holding them and I'm like, it's just like so much food. They're going to like fall asleep before they finish.
We did see a baby double fisting sandwich.
That's a good point. We saw this baby. It was just like one sandwich each hand. It's the same sandwich. It was like he wanted to like try his mom's sandwich. Mm-hmm. And his mom's like, it's the same sandwich. But he's like, no. He's like, so he kept taking a bite of one and a bite of the other and a bite of one and a bite of the other. So
he could not have been maybe 2 years old.
It was amazing. It was just, it's like a sandwich aficionado happening.
Yeah,
just like
I think so.
Being born right there. Just like, this is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This...
So maybe your kids get a whole sandwich themselves.
Maybe
they
kids
get
do
two.
Get a whole sandwich.
Maybe they get one chopped in half or in quarters.
But that was just more to say, like, not that your child cannot handle a sandwich.
No,
more
but it's a lot of food. You and I split one and it was like a full
sandwich. It was
sandwich
kind of like,
each,
wow, that was almost like too much. Yeah, we were both struggling to finish it at the end.
Mm-hmm. But they have classic flavors, essentially.
Basically, it's like what, cured meats and then cheese.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there are variations on that. Different meats, different cheeses, usually a couple vegetarian options, which is what we ate and it was great.
Mm-hmm. And then there's often like, I mean, even the meats and cheeses is like they have arugula on some or pesto on some, or like they do a lot of vegetables under oil, like so zucchini or eggplant, like it's called sotolio. So it's like, it's usually cooked, it's usually like fried or cooked, and then they kind of put it under vinegar. And then they put it under oil. So it's like a fried, vinegary, oily like slab of eggplant or zucchini.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually accompanies some of these sandwiches because it kind of gives a little bit of like a sharpness that the fattier meats sort of lack.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the La Schiacciata is I think, recount, I guess, because what you're saying earlier is like, yeah, if this is a place you want to go, we 100% encourage you to go. This is
to
more
Al Antico Venaio.
Yeah, to Al Antico Venaio. Yeah, so it's more of like, if this is like, it's been on my list for years, definitely go. This is not to urge you to not go. It is simply for those of you who are sort of wary about missing out, like, oh, I just don't want to wait in line for 2 hours for a sandwich while everybody in front of me is like just, you know, because part of it is everyone's like taking pictures. So it's kind of, it slows it down even more because it's not just like, let's get through and get sandwiches. It's kind of like everyone has to stop and pose and pictures.
Ooh, there's no seating either.
That's the big one.
Okay, so Al Antico Venaio does not have seating inside. You'll see a bunch of people either standing around with their sandwiches or sitting on the curb. And La Schiacciata has limited seating, but there are some tables inside.
It's definitely the place to go if you need to sit and you want a similar, tasty, yummy sandwich at the same price in literally the exact same area.
Yeah.
And
like 10 feet away.
Like 10 feet away. No, almost no line ever. Yeah, I think that was this is more just to say, it's not like, don't go to El Antico Vendayo. It's just, if you get there and you're like, I cannot do that line, but I really want to know what that sandwich tastes like, right next door, there's a great alternative.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the only place.
No, our favorite one is called Da Vinatieri, and it is not on the same street, actually.
It is not at all.
But it is... What is it near?
It's near Dante's Museum, which
yes.
It's kind of a, that might not be like on a lot of people. I think I'm speaking directly to our dear listeners. As I say, my friends. I don't know. But it's, you might not be going to Dante's Museum, so that's totally fine. So it's a little bit like south of, like towards the river from the Duomo. It's going to be one of those things that's like, it sounds confusing now, but once you're in Florence and you realize how small it is, then you're like, oh, this is impossible for places to hide.
Yeah, definitely.
But there's like Dante's Museum. It's like Dante's Church. Hilariously enough, if you ever take a walking tour, a lot of them go past Dante's Church.
Yeah,
and you
and
will
past
go past
the shop.
Like Vinatieri.
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 It's. I don't think these are Italian words. I feel like these are like just some.
They might. Well, I was gonna say they might be Florentinian words. But Florentinian is Italian.
Yeah.
Italian's hard, y'all.
Italian is hard. You know, you'd think we've been here for 3 years. You'd think we'd speak fluently, but we are
struggling,
muddling our way through it for real.
But I do just before we go on about these amazing sandwiches, a note: La Schiacciata and El Antico Vinaio are near the piazza. No, the Palazzo Vecchio.
Okay, so it's which is the okay. So the Palazzo Vecchio. There's the Piazza della Signoria. That's
yeah.
In the piazza, which is basically almost kind of ish touching the Uffizi area.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so that's a kind of, there's a little, it's hard to explain, again, we don't have a map. If there's like a video, I could just hold a little map. But a lot of this is like, you know, connected in some way. So it's sort of
and
like.
And the historical area of Florence, well.
It's so tiny.
It is. The historical touristy area. I say that as. I say that as a tourist, exactly. That's where most of us are going to be. I'm sure there are beautiful, wonderful places outside of and historical things outside of that area, but most of us are going to be in a very walkable, at least for us, easy vicinity.
Yeah, and a lot of those, I mean, I think we have one more sandwich place and a couple other recommendations, and they're all within, like, the touristy area, but that's not in a bad way. It's just simply, like
it's where all the big monuments are.
That's kind of the thing, and a lot of people don't spend that long in Florence. We've found, we've even recommended as a day trip. We went on a day trip ourselves, but a lot of people spend maybe 2 days, 3 days maximum.
You could spend a lot more time.
You could
there,
definitely,
obviously.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
But so a lot of these recommendations are going to kind of be in that area rather than like kind of far flung. Because I think our recommendations for like Rome, for instance, are when we get to that part will be. Not like around the Colosseum. It's going to be like, no, it's like, you know, a 10-minute bus ride.
They are more far-flung.
Yeah,
absolutely.
To some of the best food you're going to have in Rome kind of thing.
So let's talk about these sandwiches.
Let's definitely get into
it. Vinatieri. They're super good.
Nailed it. All right, let's move on.
And how much are they?
They are all €5.
Yes. And there are several different options. A lot of them are meat options. I think there are two or three which are vegetarian options. I had one. We split one, and then we went back twice in the same day, and I got the same sandwich. This was on Monday. And it was, what, smoked scamorza, which is cheese, smoky cheese, and zucchini. Grilled zucchini, and pistachio.
Like cream is what they call it, but it's just like
it's just not muddled up. What do you call it?
Like almost ground. Like a pesto of pistachio.
Yeah. And it was delicious. So, so good.
And as far as the size thing goes, they are not half the size of the ones you might find at La Schiacciata or like Al Antico Vinaio. They're a little bit bigger than that, but...
They are more normal sandwiches.
I will say they're more normal, and it doesn't feel as... I'll be honest, like when we split one, we're like, that was good, we should... To totally get another one, but then we went back later when we were starving, and I think we both got to the end of the sandwich. We're like, oh my god, thankfully we got one each, but like they weren't any bigger because it
was
just
we were
sort
slowing
of,
down by the last few bites.
It was getting really like, okay, this is, we can do it. But very quickly, just like basic information, and then we'll kind of get into why we like the sandwiches, I guess, is there is some seating. It's a lot of it in the summer and fall and probably spring. It's going to be stools outside on this little alleyway, which is not bad. I will say it's because it's usually half the alleyways in shade, depending on when you go.
But not like table seating inside.
Yeah, no table seating inside. There are stools inside as well. But again, this is a very small little place. It's
there's maybe like 5 or 6 stools total.
Yeah. And there's a little like kind of like marble counter on one side. Like it's like, it's I don't know, it's like a little shelf, I guess. And it's kind of where you can put like your sandwich or your, well, they also serve Lampredotto. And then above it, there's another smaller shelf where you can put your little cup of wine. Mm-hmm. And when you see it, there's kind of two entrances. Or one's just a window and it's just for Lampredotto and Tripa. Mm-hmm. And it really is delicious there. Like the first time we went, again, we haven't tried it. I'm saying it's delicious because the first time we went, we saw this guy like order the Lampredotto and it came in a little bowl and he was kind of not like, that he was just kind of like, okay,
it doesn't look good.
I was gonna say, actually, one of the things, it's called Lampredotto, which comes from the Italian word for eels,
because
it looks like a like eels. So it doesn't quite look appetizing.
Yes, I don't think anybody thinks it looks appetizing.
Yeah, I don't think that's somebody's first thought, is like, that looks delicious. But I mean, he was like starting to eat it. I'm watching him eat it just because I kind of enjoy watching other people eat food sometimes, because I'm like, are they enjoying this? Or are they hating this?
People watching, I think, is a way.
Yeah, that sounds way less creepy. Thank you. With people watching. I like people watching. But no, he's eating this. And then he like, it goes from this like total, like, I don't know, fear of what he's eating to like, this is actually really good. How is this really good? And then all
like,
of a sudden
he like was like trepidatious with the first bite. And then the second one was like, wow, this is actually really good. And then like, ravenously
yeah.
like finishing this tripa, yeah,
and goes back for a second bowl, and it was kind of just like, okay, he's the only person. So we kept seeing people everywhere kind of eating it. It's just, it felt like ubiquitous, like everybody, there's anywhere near one of those Lampredotto boxes or at any of these like sandwich places that have a Lampredotto, sometimes a separate window, like da Vinatieri. They might have a separate window, and so it's always like people, and the expressions do range from like a little bit afraid to this is my normal lunch, so it's, you know, it's fine, to like this is the best thing on earth. And that was like the first time I'd seen this is the best thing on earth. And then so that's when we were just having the sandwiches. We still have not tried it, but if you're going to try it, I definitely recommend this place simply for that.
And it is really cool because the main entrance, the one door to the restaurant or sandwich shop, it's more of a sandwich shop, I should say. You enter and there's sandwich maker behind the counter and bunch of meats in the little deli case and tons of different like sauces that they make in-house, different things to put on the sandwich, different like sott'olio vegetables and all these different things. What do you call all the elements of a sandwich?
Yeah, like not the condiments, but the extra bits, the other bits.
And then there's the window, like Nathaniel said, where you line up to get the Lampredotto. And it's just kind of cool that we're, you know, different lines for different, you know, and families splitting up depending on who wants what.
It felt a little more, and also I think in my experience, and your experience, maybe I'm speaking for you, but every time we've gone there, there's always been locals there because it's always been kind of people who clearly know their way around it. Sometimes it almost feels like this, like sometimes people have a tab or something and they probably don't, it's probably they're paying, but it's like just this very like, as soon
very
as they
like
come
jovial,
up
chubby
it's like they're already getting served, and it's very like, oh, so it's clearly like where people go to have lunch. It's clearly like a I don't know, they're their normal spot for a lot of people. Plus they have like, I think €1, €1.50 for a little glass of wine to go with your,
it's $2.50.
Ooh, it's gone up in
which
price.
Which is totally worth it. I just want to say, I think it's $2 or $2.50, something like that.
Okay, so it's gone a little up. Everything's gone a little up, unfortunately.
But I mean, $6 you said for the sandwich?
Five.
The sandwich. Okay, $5. I mean, you can't beat it. And they're amazing. They're so good. Well, and this time we met Simone, who's the proprietor. What would you call him?
Yeah, the owner. Yeah. I think. We've actually seen him before a couple times working usually at the Lampredotto window every time we went. And this is the first time he's making the sandwiches, but it was really, we went obviously in the morning and got the sandwich. It was great. We went back. He recognized us. He's like, he came back. How was it? And we had this whole conversation and I explained, you know, I think, or actually you explained that I'm like having this weird diet right now where I've been vegetarian for like 5 years, but I like need to do an exclusion diet. So I have to basically cut out everything I've been eating. And that leaves pretty much like some vegetables and meat.
I've been eating like cabbage, zucchini, apples.
And chicken.
And chicken.
And so I was a little like, you know, and we've had a bit, I'm having like a bit of a cheat day anyway, but I was like trying not to go like too like much into like everything I'm not supposed to be eating. And so I was like, you know, do you have, you know, Darcy was like, do you have chicken by any chance? He's like, of course, yeah, because it's not on the board. Mm-hmm. And so he's just kind of like, I've got this, I got that. He's like cutting it up, trying some. He puts like some balsamic vinegar on one piece. He leaves the other one kind of as it is.
And lets like, you try it. He's yeah. like, yeah, you tell me which one, whatever you like.
And it was great. And he's like, okay, you want me to make a sandwich for you? Do you have any idea of what you want on it? And I'm like, whatever. You tell me.
He just made you this little custom sandwich. And in fact, when we went in the morning, there were a couple parents picking up some sandwiches, and they both just picked out a meat and I think like a vegetable to go with it. And they were both like, yeah, you tell me whatever sauce thing you think goes
yeah,
with it.
Yeah, right. Because it was at the porchetta. Mm-hmm. He was like, whatever you think is the best.
Yeah, just a sandwich master.
And I did. I actually looked at some reviews afterwards. I was very curious. And a couple of people had mentioned that, like, you know, because they do have, I mean, you know, it's Italy, and if you've never been to Italy before, there are a lot of meats and sausages that are quite regional. And I think there's one, and I just for the life of me do not remember the name. It's like Ficonaio, something to do with fenocchio, which is fennel seeds. And I had never really heard of it before, and it seems to be part of the region, which is not surprising. I haven't heard of it before, I should say. Again, I don't eat meat, so I wouldn't have heard it. But you'll constantly see it in like stores, especially in the South, all the different different kinds of sausages they have. And this one was kind of interesting because it's basically some kind of sausage just stuffed with a bunch of fennel seeds, it looked like. And that was like, that was part of a sandwich and all sorts of other cuts. And when I was looking through the reviews, a number of people had said, like, you know, I'd never heard of any of these things before. And, you know, I was allowed to try like little bits of a couple of them to figure out which one I liked, which isn't entirely uncommon, but it's also not that common, depending on like where you go and how busy something is, because there were some great sandwich places we've been, even in Rome, but it's kind of like we're too busy and not set up in a way that we can slice off a little bit and give it to you. You kind of have to know what you want going in. But this one really was, it was really just kind of sweet, because it was, again, going back to that sort of like wanting to make sure that what he gives you is the best possible thing that you will enjoy. Rather than like, you know, fitting to one of the sandwiches that he like made, because
he's so excited. Like it was kind of a slower day there, I think. So we saw him checking in with everybody at least once to see what they thought, and he's got so excited when people weren't excited about what they were eating.
Absolutely,
it was so sweet.
And I think we talk about this a lot, and it kind of goes back to that sort of. I mean, I'm happy for Alan Ticovenaio. You know, and they started in Florence, and they've exploded beyond Florence, and it's very exciting. It's like. You know, kind of you wish these people the best, because you're like, you know, you're able to make more than a living. But I think it's also really kind of fun to find the places that are still in that kind of labor of love sort of place, I guess. Because I don't know. I mean, like, hopefully this guy's making money. Like, I really hope he's making money, because otherwise this is miserable. But sometimes I feel like there's that little it just changes. And we've noticed it with like gelato shops. I think we talk about all the time, where it goes from like. This one small place that's visited, but not that visited, that's like really just good. And as soon as it gets slightly bigger, it's just like, oh, they stopped doing something. And now it's not as good. And I think there's a pizza very famous, we keep mentioning it, in Naples, Sorbillo. We've gone there for like 8 years. And literally 8 years ago, it was phenomenal, tiny, you know, and just insane. And then as it expanded, it got really not good for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. I think now it's actually quite good. But it doesn't quite feel as like how it did back when it was one store. Mm-hmm. And
still very famous, but
yes,
you know, very well known by Italians, lesser known by people from outside of Italy. And now it's just...
Yeah, they have like one in like New York City. They have one in LA. It's just like, oh my God, they have... Yeah, it's like cookbooks and this and that. So that's all to say is we really like this place, and it kind of very much feels like... I don't know. It's like it feels in that really precious place where it's like hasn't yet... quite exploded, but it very could get there one day, because it's just simply like, I mean, genuinely really good sandwich. Feels like good quality ingredients, and also it's like super centrally located. Mm-hmm. I mean, within maybe 2 minutes at the most, you're at the Duomo. A minute, you're at Dante's Museum. I mean, there's kind of little shopping areas all around wherever you are. So I think it's a very centrally located sandwich place as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, we stayed quite centrally whenever we visited with my mom, and we brought the sandwiches back up to the hotel room.
We did.
Just because we were exhausted. So easy to get something to go as well if you want to do that.
That's a very good point. That is. So that's our favorite sandwich shop, if you cannot tell. I think we spent like 15 minutes on this one.
We really let's talk about pastries.
Yeah, that's a fun little like segue. I like pastries.
So we have, well, you have it after you have your sandwich.
That's a good point. We have it before sandwiches. Before,
or both.
We have them all the time.
Yes. We do a lot of munching when we travel.
Well, it's like, I think we do small foods all the time. Like yes. We split a lot of small things.
Luckily,
we
split a lot of things. Yeah.
I think if you're by yourself, if I were by myself, I'm like, okay, it'd be like, even though today we had a tiramisu, and it was just like, if it was by myself, I'm like,
it's too much.
Yeah, I'm going to shock, but it's kind of like we get to split. But then it's also like I didn't have that much. I could get like a gelato in a couple minutes. I can, go back for tiramisu. If
you strong-armed me into a gelato and two tiramisus today.
I can't believe that happened. That was amazing. It's her birthday, so I think we get a free pass on this, everyone.
Okay, let's talk about the pastries in Florence.
Let's talk about those pastries.
Okay, so we have, I would say, two favorite places for pastries. That are
two very different, but very favorite.
Very different, yes. Very different, but very favorite. Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about Fedora first.
Beautiful.
Okay, so Fedora is a cafe. They do actually have lunch options, pastas, sandwiches. We haven't had that, but they're a cafe with all of these amazing pastries that are all made by the students in the pastry school.
French pastries, I believe, predominantly.
Predominantly, yeah. We had a brownie.
Think not French, I guess, Viennese? What do we call it in English?
Viennese. Yeah.
Okay, so they're from Vienna. So it's like croissants, pain au chocolat, the flaky rolled things that you might find in a French or a Viennese, Venezuela. I want to say Venezuela, but I don't think that's the right word.
You're thinking of Vichyssoise?
I'm thinking of Vichyssoise.
Okay,
is
that a so fish they're sauce? Not that.
Is it fishy? Is it fish soup?
I think so.
So it's not that. Okay. It's but the beautifully flaky, buttery pastries that one thinks about and dreams about when they go to Paris.
Yeah. And so we walked by it probably once thinking, oh, it would be so nice if we could eat there. Wow, it looks so fancy.
Mainly because of that beautiful garden courtyard.
Yeah, so when you see it, there is a large, what would you call it? Not a domed door, arch doorway. And then when you enter that, to the right is the entrance to the cafe. And then beyond that is this beautiful garden where you can sit while you eat. And you can see that from the street, just through the doorway. Little portico.
Oof, fancy words. SAT words.
And it looks really fancy. And it looks expensive. So we didn't go in the first time. The second time we saw it, we were visiting with your dad. And, right?
And I think the... was it the Airbnb owner who was like, you guys should try that pastry shop next door. It's like this like student pastry thing. Mm-hmm.
And your dad was like, I'll pay. Don't worry. And so we went in because he can afford it. Maybe. I don't know. But he offered to pay. And it was delicious. It was wonderful. Your brother and your dad, we all enjoyed it.
We got four coffees and four pastries.
Mm-hmm. I believe. And it was how much?
I think it was €9.
And your dad was like, is this for mine only? Is this for everybody's? And it was for everybody's. It's just
he felt bad. He came out and he's like, Nathaniel, can you go back in there and ask them if it's, do I need to pay more? Like, I don't know if I paid enough. And I'm like, well, we should run away. No, we looked at the receipt and it was like, wait, that's for four pastries and for four. And I think we went back later that afternoon because I was like, okay, we're only here for a few more nights. We're going to go here as often as possible. Mm-hmm. And we did ask. And I think it's all pastries, or all the baked pastries, I should say, are €1 each.
If that's still accurate.
If that's still accurate. Because that's how I think it was. Because we went, 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. And we had two pastries, a coffee, and a bottle of water. Mm-hmm. And I think we paid five. And I ended up doing the math. I think we ended up doing the math. That it was like... three for the coffee and the bottle of water, and then two for the pastries, or something like that. Or maybe $1.50 for the pastries. Either way, insanely cheap. Mm-hmm. Let me rephrase this. Insanely in line with other Italian pastries from typical cafes.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Because they look like they would be much more expensive than that. And so basically, whenever we went this past Monday, I asked because we just arrived like close to lunchtime because we took the 9-something train and there was a delay, blah, blah, blah. So there were a lot of pastries gone by the time we had arrived. I thought the previous time that we went, almost a year ago now, that there was a second batch of pastries that came out in the afternoon. But when I spoke to someone this past time, just this Monday, she said that they only come out in the morning, which is neither here nor there necessarily.
But it's just to say, like, we're talking about after lunch, having, like, if you after your sandwich, you can go for pastries, but it really might be more of a for breakfast go. And then if you're okay missing pastries, you know, go back for coffee kind of thing and see if they have something. Not that everyone needs to go twice in a day. We are crazy people, to be clear. But again, it is, I think one of the, you mentioned there's students. And it's something to keep in mind is that they're all really good pastries. And sometimes they're left in the oven a little long.
That is true. It's a bit of a hit or miss on whether they're going to be a little extra toasty. We have had some that are perfectly cooked. We have had some baked. We have had some that are a little brown, but think, still good.
And I'm curious too, like, we've obviously had a couple heat waves and this and that, and we went in the fall last time, which we kind of just forgot until we got there this time. And I was like, is this really hot for Florence? And then we're like, what are we talking about? We're in October last time. And that can affect, obviously, a lot of things like rolling out the croissants and stuff, because it should be cold to frozen when you roll it out. And I imagine if it's difficult to cool anything in the, in the middle of summer, it's going to be difficult for sure to cool a pastry room. I mean, just because it's not in the basement, it's like, you know, on the second or third floor. So that is to say, it's like, I think this one too, is like, I felt a little bit like, oh, last time was a little better. But they're really very worth, I think, the trip.
Absolutely. They're delicious.
Plus, it makes it really easy because it is pretty much right in the middle between the Galleria Academia and the Duomo.
Yes.
So if you're like looking at the David and you're like, you know what, we can go for a coffee. Or if you're looking at the Duomo, you're headed to David and you're like, we can go for a coffee. It's right there. Same street. I say same street because it's called Via Ricasoli. And it's like the not the main street, but it's, I mean, actually, it looks like a tiny little neighborhood street, funny enough, but it is the street between the Galleria and the Duomo. And there's a number of other little things on that street. I mean, it's a quite a, I mean, our favorite gelateria, which we'll talk about in a second, is on that street, as well as, like, you know, Italy Kitchen. Like, it's the kitchen restaurant for Italy, which is, if you've never heard of Italy, which we really hadn't until we went to New York once, it's like a bunch of Italian food in a supermarket.
Yeah, but it kind of looks like a mall or a...
Yeah, I don't know how to it's like a really gorgeous, imagine all the gourmet Italian food that some of it is like for sure not for Italians because you're like, there's no way to eat this.
Yeah, it's like a expanded Whole Foods or Fresh Market.
That's a good way of putting it. That's
kind of a really good way of putting with it. With World Market. Wow, capitalism in America.
That's you're nailing it. You're knocking it out of the park though. And then because there's a bunch of I mean, in the big stores, there's like the place where you eat fish, and there's the roasteria, which is a bunch of roasted stuff, and there's the pizza area, and there's the pasta area, and it's like three or four.
Is that how the one in Florence is? We're describing the one in Rome,
no,
right?
No, because the one in Florence is only the kitchen, so it's just like a restaurant, but like I guess with Italy products, so you can't actually see what else they have.
But you can eat the food.
Well, and speaking of too, this is the same thing with the cafe Fedora. It's because it's the students. They also do. It's, I think it's a daily menu, so. It doesn't, and maybe it's more, maybe it's like a weekly menu, but we looked at the menu and it says today's food that are being cooked by the students are blah, 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 blah. So it seems to be like whatever they're focusing on that day is what you're going to get. And I mean, they're, I think the prices are a bit cheaper, I would say, than most of the dishes. Most of the dishes in Florence are like 12 to 15 for lunch and maybe like 15 to 20 for dinner. Not that there's lunch and dinner places or dinner prices, but like, a lot of the restaurants we saw that are open for dinner are not open for lunch. And then a lot of the ones that are lunch focused aren't necessarily open for dinner. So this one is about, I think, $9 for a dish, which does make it a little bit cheaper. Again, you run the risk of like maybe somebody oversalted it or forgot to salt the water or something like that. So it's just like, it's good, but could be better. But you're kind of getting that, like, I mean, you're helping out a burgeoning young student. It does. I will say it's funny. We talked about this in the first time we recorded this episode. It feels a little weird going there because everybody there speaks English. They're all, almost all of them, I think, are non-Italian.
Many of them are American.
Yeah, many of them are American. And when you go outside in the little beautiful patio, it is like kind of, it's almost like being in some sort of weird American school campus because you're just like, it's a bunch of people speaking English and they're all... Well, I was going to say like 5 years younger than me, but they're in the mid to early 20s.
There are more students this time. I don't know if there's a certain school calendar thing situation happening. Sometimes we've been and there are several Americans, but they're tourists, or sometimes the garden is almost empty and it's just us. This time, maybe it was just a break between classes. I don't know. There were a bunch of young students chit-chatting on their laptops, but it wasn't anything that like hindered the experience in any way. It's just, it's kind of a space warp instead of a time warp sometimes.
Yeah. And I think also too, it's a good place. I mean, like you and I felt like sometimes when we travel, we get a little like not homesick, but certainly like, I don't know. It's nice to sometimes overhear English and you're just like, oh, that was actually kind of nice. So if you're feeling like that, if Florence is not the beginning of your trip, or if it's like the middle or even the closer to the end, and you're just like, I'm kind of like missing home a little bit, it is kind of cool to hang out, because then you're just, for a brief second, you feel like you're back in America. If you're from America, I should say. If you're not from America, it's not going to feel like home at all. Yeah. You're like, what's with all these Americans here? So I will say it's maybe a little bit different. But I will say the pastries are genuinely, while they are hit and miss, they are genuinely really delicious.
Yeah. Let's talk about our other favorite pastry shop.
Let's do it.
Yeah. What is it called? It's called the
Forno Sartoni. S-A-R-T-O-N-I. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think it's basically, I'm sort of hesitating on it because it's a forno, which means it's more of a like a bread bakery. And they have bread, and they have a lot of bready pastries. Mm-hmm. They do have, and I say bready pastries, I mean like, cookies, breads that are like sweet breads.
Mm-hmm. Also rolls that are savory.
They do have pizza Italia, which we talked about in the Rome episode. It's just like pizza in a big pan, and they cut it to size. I don't know how good that is. We have not tried it mm-hmm. from there because we were eating sandwiches in Florence.
Yeah.
But when I say it's a different pastry place, it's not like Italian pastries, like the dainty ones and the beautiful ones.
Yeah, they're not like highly finished, very decorated, small bites.
Yeah, it's just a very classic Italian, and I would say probably even Florentinian, because they do have the, schiacciata? Is that the bread?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they have the schiacciata with the grapes, mm-hmm. that con uva, UVA, that's a grape mm-hmm. in Italian.
What was that great bread that you got the other day?
I don't remember. She told me the name of it. And one of the sort of major downfalls, I think, of a lot of Italian baked goods is they all have a specific name. Like, yeah. They can't just say it's a, you know, it's bread with
but
this.
But they also don't all have a sign. Like a little tag. Yeah, so you have to ask about what it's called. And if you don't write it down, gone forever.
And this one was a raisin and rosemary bread.
It was so good.
It was, I mean, and again, the first time we've gone there seven times, and it's like, you think each time it's something a little bit different they have. I mean, they have like classics, and then they have like, oh, some other things. And this one was just like, wow, that's like weirdly good. Mm-hmm, it's a little mm-hmm. sweet, plus the rosemary, plus the raisins.
And they have tarts and pies, and yeah. I believe you can get slices of things, maybe not of everything.
That's a good point. I think it's slices of the tarts.
Some of the tarts, yeah.
Yeah, I think we got a couple, we got like a slice of something for your mom once.
I almost got a slice. They had a chocolate.
Oh my God, that was beautiful. That just looked like pure chocolate, and then so like a little crostata.
Yeah.
But if you want, like, if you're hankering for like a classic Italian experience, if you want like a little bread roll, bring back to the hotel or Airbnb. If you're just looking for something to put lunch on, anything like that. I mean, if you're going on a train trip the next day and you need food, it's a good place to stock up on little, you know, rolls and things. That's a fantastic option. It's probably one of the best fornos in, we tried a number of fornos in Florence, and that's probably the only one like really worth mentioning simply because it's one of the better ones that we've
really
been to.
And again, centrally located.
Oh, that's the other thing. It's right down the street from the Duomo as well, like mm-hmm. on a side street, but you could literally, I think, walk from that to the sandwich place that we like. Which I keep messing up the name of it. I don't know why.
Da Vinatieri.
So it's kind of on a straight line. Not quite, but it's straight-ish line between the two.
Yeah.
So that's covers the pastry places, yeah? Mm-hmm.
That one deserves just as much talking about as Fedora, but it's just so fairly normal that I don't have that many words about it.
It's interesting because you and I have, I think, Fedora is like kind of become like abnormal for us. Some like it's French pastries made by a lot of Americans and foreigners. It's in a, you know, they got the courtyard. It's a whole thing. But then the other one's just like, are you looking for classic Italian stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Look, no, you know,
yeah. that does it look classically further. Italian? Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I think you and I is like, that's just a normal good bakery. Mm-hmm. That's someone we'd like recommend to people who are Italian, who are going to Florence, who are like, haven't been here before, but looking like, where's the basics? I'm like, that's the Fortuna that you need.
Yeah, absolutely. And also like, bread. Did you mention that?
Yes, they have bread. Okay. Yeah.
You can buy just regular bread.
I think we've tried it. I think it's okay. I mean, it's good. It's not good. Like, it's bread. But it's like, yeah, we weren't really doing anything with it. We were only in Florence, I think, for like 4 or 5 nights. So it's kind of like, what do we need bread for?
Yeah.
We kept going out to eat or, you know, getting stuff from grocery stores. Mm-hmm. So moving on, other sweet stuff.
Yeah. Gelato.
Gelato.
So our favorite gelateria is La Strega Nocciola. The location that we always go to is near the Duomo, but there are two others, right?
I believe there's two others, one near the Ponte Vecchio and
on one... the other side of the river.
I think there's one on either side of the river.
Oh, okay.
I think they're kind of, and again, they're all century located, and they're all kind of decorated the same, like in the sense of they have this exposed brick wall, they have the whole thing. They do serve their gelato out of the pozzetti, which is like the little stainless steel canisters, mm-hmm. Rather than like the tubs.
Yeah. And that's something that you were talking to me about the other day, is that it's a thing, in Tuscany, right? To do the mountains of gelato.
Yeah.
It's like what we've heard recently, which we always stay away from because it just kind of, when you get that sense of like, oh, that looks inauthentic, that's kind of how they look. But you said the other day that there's this hullabaloo amongst gelato makers, because sometimes people will essentially cut corners, cut costs, and inject air mm-hmm. into the gelato to make it go farther and look fluffier. And sometimes, not necessarily every time, but sometimes that is what you see piled up, because they can get, with a lesser amount of gelato, they can get a higher stack. But by the time it gets to your cup or your cone, it's all melty and full of air.
And I think it's kind of like, I mean, not to start listing brand names in America, but like Breyers, a lot of the Breyers flavors are no longer ice creams. So they're like frozen dairy dessert. Mm-hmm. But it's like you compare that to like the original Talenti, sort of not the new, a lot of the new ones are really weird and airy, but it's like the weight difference alone is sort of like, oh, or actually, no, great example, if you have a Costco, the Costco ice cream is fantastic. Like that is like the Kirkland ice cream is like amazing. It's very simple ingredients. But it's also quite heavy. And then you compare it to like two Breyers and you're like, that's not, what is it? It's air? I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, a lot of gelato is like that. We did talk about it, if you are curious, in our gelato episode, kind of what to avoid, such as, you know, artificial colors when it's piled up like that. And I think a big part of it for us is it's gelato is almost something that doesn't need to be advertised. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't need to advertise ice cream. If it's ice cream, people are going to come for it. It's ice cream. It's delicious. It's always delicious. So it's kind of like when somebody is trying to advertise it, whether it's piling it up or putting a bunch of stuff on top of their, like they put a bunch of like the fruits or the this or the that on top of the gelato to kind of,
or like full candy bars
or full candy bars. Like, yeah.
It's a Snickers gelato. Yeah.
It's kind of, it sets off warning bells for me. It's like when the ones, the pozzetti are ones you can't see it. So it's like, it has to sort of stand on its own. It has to stand just on flavor. And if it's popular and stands just on flavor, then you know it's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
Because there's also like a very little to nothing to gain from artificial colors, because again, no one can see it until it's in the cup. So it's mm-hmm. like, you know, I mean, why would you artificially color something that no one's going to see until it's too late, until you've already paid for it? So that's a classic one. There are, I will say, like 5 or 6 good ones that we've heard about. We just did not get a chance to try this time. Mm-hmm. We were a little sugared out after our pastry sessions. and we figured we'll just go to a classic, get some sorbet. But there are another 5 or 6 kind of well-known ones in Florence. Though I do urge people like to kind of just check around, try to find good ones. Because it does, I think we've talked to people who are basically like, you know, the first gelato I had was great, but then I kept finding bad ones. And it's just...
We've had a lot of bad gelato in Florence.
We have. And I think a lot of people have a lot of bad gelato in Italy, just because it's, you just go for the one that's the closest to you when you want gelato, rather than like the 2-minute walk away. And I think because now La Strega Nocciola has 3 locations in Florence, it does make it a little easier to find, depending where you are. You don't have to kind of go big walking for it. But mm-hmm. if that's not something you want, or if you tried that and you want something else, I definitely urge you all to kind of look, even just Googling. I mean, I think there's probably a million articles on it. But
our recommendation is La Strega Nocciola.
Absolutely. That's definitely, like, you can't go wrong, basically. Like, there might be better, but there's a lot worse.
I think you'll be happy with
La Strega. I think you'll be very happy.
We're always happy with La
Strega Nocciola. Yeah.
So to finish up, I think we should talk about wine.
Beautiful.
Okay. So off the top, because I've just said wine and we're talking about Florence, let's talk about the wine windows, because they're famous now.
Yeah.
You may have heard of them. You may have seen little reels on Instagram, because everybody takes a video. I'm not like being grumps about it. I would take a video if I'd gotten a glass of wine from a little window. But so there are two in Florence, and they weren't actually running really before COVID.
Yeah, I think it was like during COVID they were allowed to start. I mean, they've been shut down for like 150 yeah, something.
They're very old. They're from the plague era, yeah. Right? To keep germs away. And then they were shut down for quite a long time. And then when COVID happened, somewhere along the way they were reopened because you could limit the amount of germs that were being spread.
So, that's the idea, yeah.
Yeah, so now there's two, and I'm going to look at my list and read them to you. So there's one called Cantina de Pucci, which is near the Duomo. We saw it, and I almost went by, but there was quite a long line. And so it's this very cute little window. Like I said, everybody's taking pictures. And you get it's not a plastic or like compostable cup or anything. It's a wine glass. So yeah. You can't leave with it. And it does not, when you purchase it, it does not guarantee you a seat.
I don't think it even allows you to sit at the thing. I think the seat's only for people who are actually eating there.
Yeah. So there were a lot of people, hanging out on either side of the street with their glasses of wine, leaning up against the wall jauntily. I mean, it looked very nice. But it's a bit limiting.
Well, kind of also seemed a little bit like everyone was excited to get it and to film the person handing them the glass. And then they're like, cool. But I can't leave here until I'm done.
Yeah, now I'm just drinking my wine standing up.
Yeah.
Which is fine if that's what you want to do.
Well, it's also, I think, there's another location you better mention, isn't there?
Yes, no, before I forget. So it's called Buchetta del Vino, and it's between the Piazza della Repubblica and the Santa Maria Novella.
Okay, so it's like on the way to and from the train station. Mm-hmm. That one we did not see. But we did obviously go by the Pucci one. Mm-hmm. And I think like my segue was to the other wine place that we actually quite like is Vino Divino, mm-hmm. Divine Wine. And that is a place that you can buy wine to walk around with, little glasses mm-hmm. of wine.
And it's $150.
$150. You cannot beat $150 for a glass of wine, folks. So you should talk about Vino Divino since that is your place.
I love Vino Divino. And Neri is the owner, proprietor. He's super, super nice. He knows all about all of the wines that they have. And something that you point out to everybody that we recommend this to is that it's definitely local wine, but it is limited. It's not like he has a giant warehouse. It's a small little shop. And it's not all from the Tuscany region because a lot of local people also shop there, and you don't always want wine just from where you are, you know. So there's Sicilian wine, there's wine from all over Italy.
I think recently it's like he has signs up these, like now has some Sicilian wines. So that's been his big thing. Yeah. Like Sicilian wines.
Mm-hmm. But he knows, I mean, he'll recommend to you, and he speaks English.
Like fluently, not like just like, oh, I have a couple words. Like
very fluently. And he'll recommend to you, you know, ask him what kind you want, recommend, you know, his favorite or whatever you're looking for. And it's Vino Sfuso. So it's all in either boxes or like casks. Or there's some in the wall as well.
Yeah, it must be kegs or something.
Yeah, where it comes from. But he'll fill up a glass bottle for you. And he has a little, what do you call it? A little
corking machine, yeah. I guess.
Mm-hmm. That he kind of just... like in Rome, where we get our wine, Sfuso, it's just giant liter and a half plastic bottles with a
cap
top.
On it. And they're like, good luck. Take that home, too.
Yeah. But his looks a little nicer. It's a regular glass wine bottle.
Which is, I think it's also, plus the little plastic cups you can take with you.
Yeah, yeah. So you can, instead of getting the, this is what I do. Instead of getting the glass of wine that you can't leave with from the window, when you go to Vino Divino, it's a plastic or compostable, I think it's a compostable cup, that you can just walk around with. Because in Italy, I don't know where you're from, listener, but where we're from in Savannah in the U.S., everybody, a lot of people come there because there are open container laws and you can drink walking down the street. In Italy, you can drink walking down the street.
All of Italy.
Yes. So you can just take your little cup of wine with you.
Yeah, it's and wherever really you want to go. Plus, mm-hmm. and I think, as you mentioned, it is small. And probably is like a Chianti or something like that if you are looking for like local regional.
Oh yeah, he definitely has local stuff. Yeah,
but it is again. It's like also like when we say wine shop, it isn't like there are some wine shops that you go
it's
into.
It's not like, yes,
there private vineyards and that kind of thing. This is more like I want to walk around with wine, or I just want to have a little bit of fun, get some kind of fun wines, mm-hmm. have them bottle them for me and take them back.
Yeah. And he's not like connected to any vineyard, like the cave, what are they called? Caves in France? What is that called?
Yeah. Cave?
There's a French word that I'm not remembering. And I believe a lot of those are associated with specific vineyards. He's not. He's just got a small selection of nice wines, and they're not very expensive. I think I paid €3 for...
I think it was €4.80 for a bottle.
Okay, for the 750 milliliter.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, basically he charges you for the wine. I think it was like $3 for the wine and then $1.80 for the bottle, if I'm not mistaken. Something like that. So you can obviously keep bringing the bottle back and, like, you know, rinse it out and he'll refill it. And it's a little bit, I mean, depending on like which one you got, I think that one was a little bit more expensive. There's ones that were a little cheaper. Mm-hmm. They're all done by the liter though. So, I mean, 750 milliliters is obviously under a liter, but, he has bigger bottles and smaller bottles if you want like a 500 milliliter bottle of wine, like mm-hmm. a little personal bottle. Mm-hmm. So it is, I mean, like genuinely, if you're interested in just, again, like I only say that because in Siena and in other parts of Florence, even in like San Gimignano, which we'll talk about in a later episode, there are these like really beautifully dedicated wine stores that are like hyper local, hyper regional. Mm-hmm. They have all sorts of offerings and options and, you know, just things. It's just like, wow, you could really get in, mm-hmm. you know, get crazy here.
And also, I mean, if you're going to Tuscany, you might be taking a wine tour. And absolutely. So you might want to be getting wine from the vineyard that you're going to, but I really highly recommend Vino di Vino.
Yeah, if you're looking to walk around Florence with some wine, if you're looking to bring something back to your hotel room, to Airbnb, if you're looking just to be like, I want something kind of nice, simple, something to go mm-hmm. with, you know,
something
dinner.
Something affordable, it's going to taste good.
Yeah,
go be able to talk to the person.
Neri at Vino di Vino is definitely, I think, the way to go. Mm-hmm. It was so far, it's like one of our favorite little wine places that we found in Italy. So
yes,
I highly
absolutely.
Recommend it. I think you do too.
I do too. Is that food? We've been chatting for a long
time
about
Florence.
Food.
I know this episode is already an hour and 11 minutes, but we've been talking for a lot longer than that because we keep cutting things out, mostly because I kept mispronouncing bistecca alla Fiorentina.
You nailed it.
And before we let you all go, I mean, you could just end it right now.
Yeah,
I'm going to do another
affiliate
marketing thing. So just go ahead and end it if you want to end it.
But it would help if you do listen.
It would be amazing if you listened. If you'd like to support us, the podcast, Only a Bag, specifically Darcy and Nathaniel, which is the beautiful faces behind Only a Bag. Mm-hmm. I think they're beautiful.
We're the only faces behind Only a Bag. There's not like some people behind the curtain here.
We have a cat in the corner that we're house sitting. That's the other person behind Only a Bag currently. She came in and knocked over the filter for a minute. That's mm-hmm. also, it took
she's
some time.
She's from management. Yeah.
She's from management. You can tell those managerial behaviors. But if you'd like to support us, there's a link in the description for tickets, which is how you can kind of buy tickets for any event, any gallery, any museum in Italy. And I say event, I mean like ideally art stuff, not music stuff. Unfortunately, Ticketmaster has their little claws and everything all over the world, but mm-hmm. Tickets is a great way to buy tickets for the Uffizi, for the Galleria Accademia, for the Pitti Palace, if you're going to Rome or Naples, you know, I mean, for Pompeii, wherever you're going in Italy, you can buy tickets for the event on tickets. The link is in the description below. We get a little cut from any sale that we make or slash that if you click on the link. Mm-hmm. So we would deeply, deeply, deeply appreciate that if you are going to Florence or Italy, and you use the link below to book your tickets, we'd really absolutely love that.
Mm-hmm. And if you'll follow us wherever you're listening to this podcast, that is also super, super helpful.
Yes, please follow and leave a review if you liked it. If you didn't like it, you could also leave a review.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd prefer like a direct message so we could like
Yeah, if you have any recommendations or questions, please feel free to send us an email.
Yeah. Besides that, though, thank you all so much for listening to our long podcast on food in Florence.
Yeah, we're probably going to go talk more about food to each other in
probably
just
after this. Well, it's dinner time, so we gotta
most of what we participate in is food.
It's a very
and
food
chatting,
oriented life.
Eating, that's what we do.
Yeah, so thank you all so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you. We'll talk to you next time.
And we hope to see you soon. We gotta learn how to end these things.
Yeah, we do.
We'll talk to you later.